successful on the implementation of the software in the government and outside of the government. And I would like to start explaining why I think this has happened, and then how we have used the advantage or the opportunity that we had correctly, and then how we have shared this know-how with other people and other projects. So at the end, open source software is the same as anything else. Used in the market, same, there's somebody else in that market or nobody. And then you have to enter in that market. And in order to enter that market, you have to have enough added value to overpower the barriers that a new entrant in the market always has. Barriers are many, but if you start looking around, fear of losing productivity, people say, well, if I change, if I change, it will take me a long time to get back to produce as much as I used to with the software that I'm using now. Maybe I will not be compatible with the other people in my office. Maybe nobody will be able to help me if I use this new stuff to things. I'll have to learn more. Maybe I will not be able to get new versions of this thing. And I don't know what this is anyway. I've never heard of this before. And maybe if I use these different things, and this is more for corporations, maybe, or countries. It's a typical future. If I use open source software, then Microsoft will be against me and I will have a problem. This is quite a usual thing that we see in Asia. But at the end, the major problem is fear. People fear change. And in order to get, to overpower this fear, you need to give enough added value. You need that. They will say, okay, no problem. But I know that at the end of the road, there's something much better. And when we talk about added value, we have to talk about two different things: governments or about corporations and people. End users think differently than corporations or governments do. Governments look for security, cost, interoperability of their systems, control of the technology, lock the language, and in many cases, more and more in the West, being politically correct, doing the politically correct choice. Which nowadays is mostly open source. And users think differently. Security is not so important. Cost, if I can't buy it, I'll copy it anyway. So it usually is not an important factor. New features, there is not that much open source software that is so much better than proprietary software that will make people change. So it's not an issue. And that ends up with only one major thing: language. The power of language is huge. I was seeing the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy movie, and I had read the book a long time ago, and I remember a sentence describing the universe. The sentence was something like, "The universe is big, real big. It's huge. No, it's mind-blowing." Well, I think the power of language is this big. And there's one more thing that I think is important for user: job security. And job security is related to the government corporation they work for. If they decide that they have to change, they have to change. So at the end, the end user has all this pile of things. Actually, it looks like a pagoda, but it's supposed to be something very heavy. That he has the added value of language and the added value for change, of not losing his job. And that depends on the added value of the corporation or government. And we can see that it will be very different. The Western world And in places where the languages are so non-economically viable, that proprietary software companies will not be interested on translating the software. So we call this the digitally endangered languages, and we have the added value of localization, which Western countries do not have. At the end, anything that will end up in Western countries, in my opinion, make Western countries change, will be prohibited from the governments. Just using free software will be mandatory, which is quite a strange idea. So localization is the only thing that actually, when you're the first one who does it, produces user demand, even if there was somebody else on the market already. So, and that can produce change. So it separates, in a country like Cambodia, what we're doing is we're separating the skill of computing and the skill of English. And this is very, very important. Because you can learn how to use computers without learning English. Your process is much shorter. You can get a job without learning English. There are many jobs that you cannot get. Even if you don't need English for the job, you need to learn English so that you can use the computer. Now I'd like to come to Cambodia. Cambodia is somewhere in Southeast Asia. There. And it's more or less as big as Switzerland, with 22 provinces. This is important because it means that it has 22 important province capitals, 22 cities, or 30 million people, most of whom are in agriculture. And a GDP per capita, about half of the price of Windows plus Office. Most people speak Khmer, and the Khmer literacy rate of about 70% of people over 15 years old. And now I'd like to show you what Khmer looks like. This is an office in Khmer. And in Khmer, like many Indian languages, the way of writing has nothing to do with what you have ever seen or thought. When you write a syllable, the first letter can be just a normal letter, like you could have anywhere. When there's a second consonant following the first one, you don't put it behind, you put it under. So this is T-S-T. And if I have another consonant following before a vowel, I will still put it below. Or below and before, or below and after, depending on which one it is. And then you can have vowels that can go either before the solved thing, or they can go after, or they can go above. Or they go in two parts, one part before and one part behind. Like this, for example. This would read something like Centrie. And you read somehow in spirals. So this is why it took a lot of time to... let me fix this problem here. This is why it took a long time to get all Indian languages and Southeast Indian languages running in this software. Because the rendering is really complicated. And Khmer is probably the most complicated of all of them. And the origin is in the same place that all the Indian languages. And just to show you, this is what OpenOffice in Khmer looks like. And I just know that this is the right place because I remember. Okay, going a little bit further, the IT market in Cambodia, about 40,000 to 60,000 computers, most of them with Microsoft Windows in English. And the market grows about 15,000 to 25,000 computers per year. Mostly in large corporations, international corporations, or large service companies like electricity or mobile phones. NGOs have 30% of the market, government 30%, and the private sector about 10%. Now, showing that there are more computers in NGOs than in the government really shows how computerized the government is. About 1,000 computer scientists are employed, doing maintenance of installations. Growth of about 80 to 150 computer scientists per year. And now we have been able to start normalizing all the everything that's happening in Cambodia. Before, there were 30 different encodings of fonts, and now we're unifying to one single encoding, which is Unicode. And we started in Cambodia in 2003. I just ended in Cambodia somehow in 2003, and I lived for a while in a handicapped children's home in one of the provinces. And I didn't want to have nothing to do with computers, but I realized that the children there were not able to do anything with the computer. They just saw this thing that were all these signs that they had never seen in their life, English letters. So I decided to look at if the problem could be solved. And I came out with the fact that the only way of doing it would be to localize file software, and that it could only be done with OpenOffice. It didn't make sense to do anything without OpenOffice, because we could not reach the quality, enough quality with any other treat that would be able to replace Microsoft. And there was also the issue that OpenOffice is multi-platform. I don't think we could do it, and I will show now why, with something that was not multi-platform. So I started writing a project, and everybody was started with social goals. One of the main problems that I have seen in a lot of localization projects is that people do very good localization work, and then nothing happens. It just goes in a drawer, and nothing else happens, because they are technical people. They don't think about, and now what do we do? So for us, the goals were clear. First, to be able to computerize the government in its own language, to be able to computerize SMEs, which now they can get people trained, but the English language is too much of a barrier. We can go out to schools, children, rural areas who do not and will never speak English. But one of the most important things is it reduced the training time. Up to now, to be trained on computers, you first have to learn English. And then, learn all these new English words that are used in computers. And learning in a foreign language is very, very difficult. Because when you're supposed that you learn a concept like cut and paste, if you're using the language, the word in your own language for cut, you relate the concept of cut to cutting something. If you have to learn the concept and any word, you have to learn two things, and they are not related to what you knew already. And so they are flying concepts, which are really difficult to retain and to remember. So changing to work on your language divides by 10 the learning effort. And then another important thing is that once you once you put languages in computers, they come into the age of technology. So they don't have to compete with English. So at the workplace, people don't have to say be speaking two languages at the same time. They just speak their own language, because there is the language includes all these words. So it was clear that the project had to include localization, distribution, and training to get any localization by itself was just not enough. And we devised a strategy. which was very clear. Promote your added value, which was language, reduce the barriers as much as you can, and let's make it a multi-stakeholder project. Make everybody participate. To amplify added value, we developed training materials in Khmer. That was developed at the beginning, so that you can take everything that you do to all the training industry and to the training, to the state's training structure. We developed a certification program. I'm still talking about the plan. The plan was to develop a certification program and make it official. And then there was a problem of community. You had to create community, but the community is not going to be about open source. The community here would be about language, people being proud of using their own language. To reduce barriers, we identify that the first one was that we could not just ask people to change to Linux. It just didn't work. There was no support in the country to do that. So we decided to go the long way, which is to first change to use Khmer applications on Windows, Khmer FOSS applications on Windows. From there, to training and installation in computers all around the country, the other barrier. And when you have people working 95% of their time in the application in their own language, then they will be much more receptive to an operating system in their own language, which is only 5% of their time. But it completes the whole thing. And that's how we're implementing it. And then it is implementing stakeholder projects. From NGO that we're doing localization. And then the government has to come in and expand inside own structures. And then use computer vendors and software distributors. I say distributors and not vendors, because anything in Cambodia costs about $2, any kind of software. And then the private training industry was also very important and part of our strategy. So in 2004, we started the Khmer OS project in the Open Forum OS Cambodia NGO, which is just a small NGO. Hired people and started preparing a glossary. It took us about 2 months to get 1,500 words translated to Khmer. We went through all the literature that had been ever written in Khmer about computers, been two words out, then been follow all the process of creation of words that has been followed in English, French, Spanish, and follow the same process of enlarging the meaning of words so that they also have a computer meaning. Not inventing new words, because inventing new words always leads to the same problem that you had before. We translated a small application, that was Thunderbird, to have some experience. We had to get funding. We had no money. The NGO we were working for had a little bit of money because the euro was very high. They were getting their donations in euros, so they had like 20% more than they had expected. So we actually got a small grant to work on localization documentation in general, something called the localization toolkit. That then reverted in ourselves because we had the information that we were managing. It actually gave us some money so that we could go on working. So we hired 4 more people and started on OpenOffice in August of 2004. As part of the funding that we got, we were supposed to do a lot of documentation and improving localization for small countries. And as part of that, we started working on clear information on how to localize OpenOffice 2.0. And this documentation at the end has become the documentation that is used by all projects. We started technical localization of OpenOffice. At the same time that we're doing the documentation, we finished localization, we started on the help. And at the same time, we were doing quite a number of other applications. Webmail showed to be more important than client-based mail because there are very few computers. only people can only do client-based mail when they have their own computer. So we translated ISP. We had a lot of technical work for support of Chimera in OpenOffice, in Java, Genome, KDE. So there was a lot of technical work also related to Unicode. But by the beginning of 2005, we were quite ready. We finished the help. We started right away developing training materials. And we developed about 15 hours of training for each one of the projects. We specified a certification system based on these materials. The materials were very important because we were creating a new language. We were creating computer language in Khmer. And the way of taking this language to the users is through the training. So we prepared standard training materials. And we prepared the certification system as a guidance system also. To us, the certification system was the way of assuring quality of education, standardization of education, so that any student could go to any place and know exactly what goal he was studying for. And it was a way for us to guide the students to open source. Because we can start with an open office certificate and an internet certificate, but then lead to a professional certificate, which requires knowing KDE or Genome as the top part of our certification block. So, we actually got some funding from the Internet Society, which made us very happy because we were quite broke. Finished training materials, and then hired 4 trainers. At this time, our team was already 10 people. But the training was the most important part, because otherwise we just keep this in a drawer, it would never go out. And we sent people all over the country just doing installations of computers, going to cyber cafes, going to NGOs, and just installing software and teaching them basics. And at that time, the government thought, oh, this looks interesting. Can we join? And I say, we're happy. You know, we're really happy. That's what we're waiting for. We have all this software that is in Khmer. And the people who should own this project is the government, not us. We're a small NGO. So they liked it, and they developed. We developed together a master plan for deployment of FOSS, a three-year program that includes migration of all the government and also acting for civil society. But this was more a philosophic project, and more was implemented into an action plan that had very specific tasks with very players, costs. And it has another important thing is that as you have a possibility of getting money as a government, then you're forced to implement the policy. So the master plan becomes very important because you want to get the money for the action plan. And if you don't approve your master plan, then your donors will not think that you are serious. So the next step is they assumed the certification system, and they decided that they were going to be the ones that issued the certificates, which is also what we wanted, because it gave much more weight to the certificates. And now we actually found also some more money from the German collaboration agency INGWEN for training, and we went training about 50 teachers a week. We developed training for trainer materials, and we have 4 trainers working full time, 4 trainers in our NGO and 6 trainers in the government, just making sure that we train as many teachers as possible. At the same time, we are we're doing Linux administration training for NGO and for the government, and preparing training materials in Khmer for the LPI examinations. And we have localized KDE now, and we're working on a number of applications. And we have developed other applications such as the touch typing program for Khmer. and word breaking. Kimeri, there's something I didn't mention about the language. You don't separate words. You write the thing together. The concept of what is a word or what is a component of words is very unclear in Khmer. When a Cambodian thinks, something could be three words or it could be just one. It doesn't matter. It's just one concept. Matter. So word breaking is actually complicated. And it's basically dictionary based. The same as line breaking. How do you know when you have to break at the end of a line? So far, the only real good way to do it is with a dictionary. So what is coming? What is coming is we're going to continue deploying on this platform. Getting as many people as possible to get used to open office. The government is going to start actively migrating different ministries, which is not that much work. There are not that many computers. To give you an idea, the usual salary of a civil servant in Cambodia is about $30, which is about a third or a fourth of what they need to live. So they spend most of their time somewhere else with a second job, just trying to get enough money to live. So the thing is, they will never have enough money to learn English. And many of the ministries are blocked, all the IT, because it's in English. So we're hoping to unblock this. And through open office in Khmer, we think that the IT industry in the country will develop. Because there is the experience of many other countries. IT only develops when you have things in your own language. I tried to buy an English board in Spain about a time ago. Not possible. Once a country has gone to use its own language, it doesn't change anymore. We're going to continue doing training for trainers. Continue creating all the Linux administrators that we need, because that will be a base for really moving. There are at least three universities now teaching Linux administration, and we're collaborating with them, creating the materials, and we expect to have some people very well trained that we will train, and some people at an average way, but that's okay. They will have time to get experience in the job. And then we have to do our own distribution. We have to figure out which way to go. There are a lot of decisions that we have made. Our first decision was good to go with KDE after a long time of thinking, and we are still not sure it was a good decision. So we don't really know which way to go. We'll continue working on KDE and see where it leads at the time of creating our own distribution. And then we have to work with the vendors, we have to work with the training industry to start changing to Linux. We think that schools will be easier to change, but we can't do it if we don't get support from vendors, service companies, and the training industry, because at the end, they're the ones who are saying what people should use. When you buy a computer, when you buy a computer in Cambodia, you have this piece of paper that they give it to you, and you put crosses on things that you want. You want Windows XP, okay, in English or in Chinese, and then Office, and then this and that. So there is kind of free. But we're getting them to install OpenOffice in all new computers. So every new computer that leaves shop by the end of this year will have OpenOffice installed in Khmer and a number of other applications. So we have to work with them to move them to Linux or at least dual installations very carefully, because they are our partners. We don't want to go against them. We want to make sure that they are in our side of the boat. We just entered WTO, and that means that in 3 or 4 years, we'll have DSA knocking at the door and saying, you, And at that time, it will be good. It will be good because it will be the next push to cause change. Okay, because the country's prepared. People are used to FOSS, people are used to Linux. To put pressure, we change, no problem. So we'll start doing training on that and migration of the government, which at the end is the most important thing. Which the policies include also, the policies that we're developing include protective policies to avoid de facto monopolies, such as the problem that they have in Japan, in which they have secret contracts. The vendors have secret contracts that turn the market into a monopoly. But the government cannot do anything because these contracts are secret. So we're trying to avoid that. We're going for open standards, open document as the standard of the government. And we really think that things will change. We really think that language is powerful enough to produce change. And once you have changed, then you are the leader. And then proprietary software, if they come into the market with software in your language, they have to do the same thing. They have to do what you did before. They have to enter the market. They have to produce change. And they want to produce change with something that costs money. So it's much more difficult. The difficult part is produce change. If you cannot add value, then it's very difficult. But again, they have a lot of money. So as a side effect of the things that... I still have time. As a side effect of the work that we have done in Cambodia, we have done a few things outside. First, when we started looking for funding, we got funding from UNDP, from the United Nations Program for Development, and that was to create documentation to improve localization worldwide. So the idea was to create documentation that small countries could use to facilitate, to easily do localization. One of the first two things that we did with this money, or with this time that this money bought, was to work on open office localization, because to us was the key to everything else. And something called the Translate Toolkit that is done by some people in South Africa. Was very good software with no documentation whatsoever. And what this software does is they would take all these applications and they take their English messages and put them in a standard format. It's called PO format. And that means that you can translate and localize these applications with the standard translation tools. And then you change things back to the format of the application, and then you compile that application. And that is now being integrated in OpenOffice. So in OpenOffice, now you translate OpenOffice using all these really nice translation editors. Working together with them, we decided to create a more ambitious project, and that is the localization framework. The localization framework attempts to improve localization of FOSS software and bring it up to an equal or higher than proprietary software localization tools. So use as much information as we can to facilitate localization with a lot of controls on translations, a lot of information for the translator. Make it really easy, and it's possible to make it quite easy. And at the same time, move toward new standards. There are new standards for localization. There are new formats, XLIF, XTM for translation memory, that can carry a lot of information, more information than the formats that we're using now. So our goal here is to make sure that the translator gets as much information as he can. Now, if you have glossary words, he will have them right there, the ones that he needs. If there is something that has been translated before that is similar, he will have it right there. He won't have to look for it. And then once he has translated, we can check that if he has used the right words, if he has reading the variables correctly. So quite a number of things that we can check and make it very easy for them and make sure that they don't make that mistakes. So this is a project that we have started now, and it will probably be going during next year. The things that we're doing are pretty much on the same line of what San has been working on. San has been working on these formats and now has open sourced some Java-based tools for localization that are based on this XLIF format. And our idea now is to put this in connection with OpenOffice and create a service to facilitate localizations of OpenOffice, especially for small economies, for what, again, we would call digitally endangered languages. And then we have another small project to help languages in our region, Lao, Bhutan, Myanmar. And this is actually, this is what we're doing, but this is too much. So I'll just want to come to conclusions. The first one is that in the countries where there's no localization of Microsoft, we can produce change. OpenOffice has a lot of possibilities of becoming the leading platform for office work. Localization is becoming simpler through all these tools. So small economies without technical resources can actually do localization, which is again the same countries that we're talking about. So there is a clear market here outside of the Western developed countries in which it's a very good market for OpenOffice. And if OpenOffice becomes the leader in these countries, then it will be somehow hard to kick it out, as hard as it is to get rid of Microsoft and Western countries. And that's what I said before, because then Microsoft will have everything against. All the barriers will be barriers to Microsoft entry in those markets, in the market of local language computing. And that's about it. So.
What does it say there? Please wait.
So yes, more or less. Any questions?
First of all, you and I have already spoken, so you know I think it's a great thing you're doing. What he didn't tell you is there was a UN meeting earlier this month in Cambodia, and Javier was there. And there were 22 countries, is that right, roughly? Many of whom are doing localizations of OpenOffice, but Javier had done sort of more, and he was thinking outside of just his country, which is a wonderful thing. I was in the last session I was in was about Community Council, and there was much made about the native language mail lists and the usefulness of the native language mail lists for end users. Do you guys plan to get involved with that?
In the Native Language Confederation, is that it? But see, the problem is that there are these two structures. There's the structure of the localization mailing list and the structure of the Native Language Confederation. And the Native Language Confederation requires contents. And so far, it's really hard to find. It's really hard to figure out how do the communities help themselves. And in these countries that I'm talking about, there are two very different communities, the community of the developers and then the users. The users don't have, I mean, we will try to create a community in Cambodia, but if it will be a language-based community, it will not be open source community. because they, it's not a problem that they want to deal with. They want software engineer. So the users are not developers. And the communities, at the end, they are interested in what they are doing. And once they do it, they forget the community. There's not so, it's no value for them.
My take on the way the native language stuff works at OpenOffice is some percentage of it is developers, as you say, but there are some of them are using them as the beginnings of self-help, end user self-help in my language. You know, like, I only speak French. How can I ask a question? Well, that's what the native language groups are for.
How much internet access is there among your users? Little. There's ADSL, but maybe there's 1,000 accounts. Very limited, very expensive.
I think the whole community structure.
But we provide support. It's language-based. Support has to be language-based.
Yeah.
So we have a support structure, the government has a support structure, but they will never go out to the community outside of Cambodia. Because we're aiming at people who do not know English. But I don't know what the solution to the native configuration thing is, because the technical work is done on the localization list. And outside of the technical work, each community is working very independently. And there is little communication. But maybe there is little need for communication. Or maybe there is no information to share. I don't know how that will work on. Questions?
So you've localized OpenOffice. Are you doing this with other open source software as well, end user applications, or are you just doing OpenOffice?
No, we looked at the complete set of applications that would be useful. So we wanted to have 100% of the applications that would be useful for at least 80% of the users. And that was Office, Internet, Chat. So it was small applications. And I think we're close. And now when we're working on the Linux distribution, then we have to pay much closer attention to it. So we need multimedia applications, we need utilities, games, and computer-aided design is going to be a big challenge, because half of Asia is moving to Unicode, especially South Asia and Southeast Asia are moving to Unicode, and the world of printing, desktop printing, does not handle Unicode. Adobe doesn't handle Unicode. Photoshop, Quark Express doesn't handle Unicode. So the whole world of printing doesn't handle Unicode now. It's an opportunity to for open source tools that are coming out. And I think it's something that has to be empowered at this time. And we will try to work on that and also localize that. But it's a small sector. It's no longer the general end user group.
We've seen attempts by Microsoft in other Asian markets to try and recapture market share, particularly for piracy, by producing stripped down versions of localized software that are very distributed. Do you think they're likely to try this in your market?
I don't think it will work, because even countries like Thailand, where this is happening, you can get the normal version for $2. So why pay $30, which is what it costs now, for something that doesn't really work? So they're...
It's the WTO link again.
Yeah.
And I think over time they'll think of other ways to get out of it. It's an interesting. interesting. It's an interesting question, but where Congress is really, really there, which is basically Thailand, and in Cambodia, it's right next door, they seem to be leaving the it's small total available market for them, where they would have localized into the same channel already. And so there's something else going on there, what they're going to do.
But you can see in countries like Malaysia that had a very developed also forced master plan, or Vietnam. There are three countries in Asia that have a master plan for deployment of force: Vietnam, Malaysia, and Cambodia. The presidents of Malaysia and Vietnam this year have visited Mr. Gates, both of them, and there have been strong changes in policy after that. I mean, I remember a couple of months ago reading a Malaysian newspaper and seeing these government officials coming in with the BSA, coming in to write big corporations. And it was funny, it was half of the page of the newspaper, vertical, was the news. And the other half of the page, the news didn't mention the name of the company. The second half of the page was an advertising by BSA with the lens. Lamentation lens pointing at the name of a company, which the article was not supposed to do. So it was like, well, they are. It was quite funny stuff, you know, like very, very organized. I mean, you do the right, and at the same time, you put the knee in the advertisement in the paper. So in some countries, they're going really hard. Vietnam and Cambodia, Laos are still not developed enough, but Vietnam will be next. And then Laos and Cambodia. But the difference in Thailand, in between Thailand and Cambodia now, is that in Cambodia, you have the shops everywhere that sell CDs for $2. So in Thailand, you have to go into the shop and say, do you have these and that? And then they go to the car outside, and then they get the CD that you need. So there's the process there. And in a couple of years, you will not be able to buy it. So and all these countries will follow this process slowly, but Microsoft wants to make money, so they can have a lot of piracy, but they have to have at least some real sales.
How are you keeping the open office of the community informed of what you're doing?
I come here and talk. we're very involved in the community. As I say, we wrote the localization documentation for 2.0, and we're in touch with at least 15 localization projects and helping a lot of them. I just went to Bhutan for 2 weeks to get the script running. We're working on Myanmar, working on Laos. We've been helping in countries like Tanzania, for Swahili, and we also work on trying to get people to write plans, to write projects. So we had a student from East Timor who worked with us for 3 months. We also helped the people in Uganda to prepare their own plan. So we're trying to expand our expertise to all these places.
I'm just thinking, you know, maybe having a page somewhere where you have your
and you know,
the community
can kept informed about everything you're doing. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, that's we try to do that through our website. But it's always hard.
I don't know about every country. How many countries do you think there is no native version of Microsoft competitor?
We just did a patch in OpenOffice because there's a number of languages that are not supported by Windows. So there was a technical problem, and we had to make the installations for Khmer, for example. They have to be in Khmer and English. So the installation is in English, but then the product's in Khmer. So we had to start this list of countries that is, the language was not supported by Windows. And we came out with 15 countries that are interested on open office or doing localization, and the language is not supported. Is we don't know you. But inside the languages that they say we know you, there are many, many languages that are not that are not being localized. No, and you look at India. India has maybe 12 major languages, and Microsoft will get there. But in many cases, OpenOffice has got there before, and nothing has happened. I think for lack of coordination, or clear social goals, or releases only on Linux, without figuring out who's going to help me. Do I have the vendors on my side? Who's doing? How am I going to get to the user? I think that in that sense, India has done all the work, had the money to do it, and they're not getting there. But I would say we have 20 to 30 localizations of OpenOffice, open projects, open localization projects that could have disadvantages.
The Debian project is seeking to be the most widely localized Linux, and they have a map of, you can find on their website, of what's missing, and they're getting close. They're at least 4/5 of the way to complete coverage. You know, they're looking at some Eskimo languages. And what I'd like to see, and I think it happens as the desktop stuff gets better, is OpenOffice right behind it.
No, what is clear is that there is no localization project that can go anywhere without OpenOffice.
On the desktop,
of course. Yeah. But localization is about the desktop. Again.
Yeah.
I have a quick question. How much do you think it would cost to Microsoft to translate its software?
I can tell you what has cost us. It has cost us under $100,000 to create all this software in Khmer. But somebody from Microsoft came and talked to the Deputy Prime Minister, and they asked how much would it cost to do Khmer in Microsoft Office in Khmer. And the answer was something like $7 million.
But they already support Arabic, they already support a bunch of they support a bunch of
combat. If it gets too dangerous for them, they can translate it for a few $1,000.
My point was, it's not a technical issue, it's a business issue, because
sure,
they have to support it.
So
yeah.
This isn't over a kind of business
they
issue.
They don't enter markets where they don't think there's enough money in the market in order to make it worthwhile. So when they come up with a crazy number, that's what they're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Next.